I'm Stella.
And I'm Graham Wheeler-Nelson.
And this is...
Anything But Spielberg!
Season two, let's go.
We're back at
it,
baby.
It's been a couple months. The world's still bad.
It's true. It's just as bad. But if not worse. It depends on your outlook,
well,
really.
Yeah.
Because it's always just in like how you perceive.
Yeah, Biden's president now.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And so that's my excuse to stop paying attention to that.
I feel like we got it, though, because, like, Biden's not, like,
yeah,
best,
no,
dude.
like, I hate that position where it's like, oh, I don't want to pay attention to politics now. But honestly, the news is so depressing. And so,
yeah, no, anytime I look at the news, I'm like, why did I do this? I'm just fucking sad now.
That's my excuse to take a break. I'll rephrase it. Because, like, I still deeply care about, like, politics and, like, in the wider sense, I guess, and, like,
can I'm going to admit something probably bad. I get a lot of my news from leftist streamers now.
Streamers? Are they like streaming video games?
No, they mostly just like, but some of them are on Twitch, but like most of them are on YouTube and they just stream on YouTube, them just like talking about politics.
Okay. That's kind of badass.
Yeah. No, and they do like debates and shit. That's why it's fun.
That's cool. I wish I would have gotten into that more when I was into like the online political scene, because I just got into like the super depressing shit. Was just like on Twitter, and it was like, oh, it was just awful.
Yeah,
very awful.
What sucks about being anti-capitalist is living in a capitalist world makes you hate everything all
and
the
you
time.
You have to participate in society too, and so it's not like and there's not really any obvious alternatives. Like, definitely, there's people who do their own thing, but
I know,
they're few and far between.
I need to like find a way to balance being a leftist and not hating the world constantly.
Yeah, that's kind of what I ran into, where it's like, it's just at a point it just gets so negative, and it's just you see so much suffering.
Yeah,
it's
everything's like, really bad.
Yeah,
I'm in it, but like I think I feel good, like I need to know. Like I would feel bad like turning a blind eye.
Yeah, I think that's a good impulse though, because it's not like you.
I feel like your computer is just constantly, like, on its own doing something.
Well, the spy had Spotify pulled up with Joe Rogan on it. He did Elon Musk, you know?
Oh, Joe Rogan. Our boy. Nothing really interesting has happened with Joe Rogan.
No, I feel like he's kind of fallen off the map now that he's on Spotify.
Now that he's in Texas.
He's in fucking Texas. He's still got those shitty red lights. Yeah. Like, I thought he would take those down after the first week.
But he had Elon Musk on.
Yeah, recently. I hate that guy. Fuck Elon.
Fuck
Musk.
Elon.
Like, what a fucking prick. He's trying to colonize the universe. That's what one YouTube video said. I only read the title, though.
It kind of is, though.
That's fucked up, though. Like, that's an ominous title.
Fuck Elon Musk and his, like, apartheid blood diamonds.
Yes! Like, no, everyone ignores this. And he, like, basically was the king of the Bolivian coup.
What?
He was the prompter, because... His batteries for all the Tesla cars need lithium, and Bolivia is like the country of lithium, where it's like untapped lithium. And so Evo Morales was proposing a nationalized lithium mining service where the proceeds would go back to the country and the people, but then Elon Musk came in, not himself personally, but through rebel groups and some bitch, Janine Annas.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but this is really interesting.
But basically, this bitch who was like a minority in the, she's white, but she's a minority in the cabinet, in like the Congress. Her party was nothing. Had like 9% or something. Nothing. Just a bitch. And, but not in a bad way. but she basically overthrew him and was like, this is a Christian capitalist nation now. And the church and state are unified. And
when was this?
In 2019, late 2019. And actually, Evo Morales was declared the victor now of the new election. So actually, Evo Morales is back in power. His party is back in power, after all. But this is like a very recent development.
The reason why I got tripped up is because like there was just another coup in Myanmar.
Really?
Is that how you say it?
Oh,
Myanmar?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, yeah,
Myanmar.
Yeah,
yeah. Myanmar. There was like a really big coup. Like, it's a big deal over there.
Fuck.
Because their current, like, I want to say president. I think it's, like, that system of their sort of democracy. Like, she had been exiled for, like, 15 years. And then she, like, came back and was really popular. And then she got elected. And then So, like, but she was of the Democratic Party. She wasn't, like, a good, like, they have, like, a pretty shitty democracy over there. So, like, even their Democratic Party is still, like, super, like, pro-military and, like, not awesome. But there's the other party is, like, the backed by the military.
Yikes.
They're, like, military police force. Yikes. And it's, like, super far right, like, really shitty. And they basically, she just got reelected again. And they, like, there was just a huge coup of the military taking over the Capitol.
That's so fucked up. But that's happened, and it was it, like, a U.S.-backed?
I,
or was it just...
You, I didn't see that it was, but probably.
Probably U.S.-endorsed. They're like, it's got our stamp of approval. Because, like, I took that U.S. and Latin America class last semester, and
all
that
we
was
did
like,
was just destroy, like, yes, wasn't socialist.
Yes, like. It was the history of coups. It was like, okay, the country was founded, and then we did a coup. And then we did another.
It was
one.
Also like any time any country introduces socialism into like their yes. democracy,
or even
the
just
US
talks
is like,
about it generally.
The US is like, we can't have this.
And even in their own country, even in their own country.
Yeah, yeah, we had a coup. We had a coup
yeah.
attempt.
If this happened in another country, you would then find out that the US did it.
Yeah.
That they're like, oh, we intervened. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was just the US.
No, yeah, it was just, yeah, it was just Obama, you know?
What are you talking about?
He made the phone call.
Oh, I'm talking about the coup, like, that happened a few months ago. Or, like, a month ago.
Oh, when they stormed the Capitol?
The attempted coup.
Are you talking about QAnon?
It's us, we're QAnon.
Surprise, guys!
Dude, that's actually the most embarrassing shit to happen to America in the last century.
I can't believe it's still happening. Like, it's 10 years old at this point. Like, what the fuck? What are you still doing with QAnon?
But, like, the people who stormed the Capitol because of QAnon.
Did they do it really because of QAnon?
A lot of them did. I mean, they're all, like, white nationalists, and they're also all, like, conspiracy theorists who think that the election was rigged.
That's like storming because of Pizzagate.
Yeah. It, like, I think in a weird way, yes,
people.
That's kind of what
they,
happened.
But they moved on from Pizzagate into this.
A lot of people still believe in Pizzagate.
Oh my God. That's so fucked up. That's so fucked up.
So, today we're...
Yorgos Lanthimos.
We're going into, at about 8 minutes into the podcast, we're diving into Yorgos Lanthimos.
So a little bit about this, Yorgos Lanthimos guy. He's Greek. I don't know if you noticed. He was born in Athens in Wikipedia. It only said, like, the neighborhood he was born in. And I was like, what's this Pueblo? And I clicked on it, it was like, this neighborhood in Athens. It's like, really? Athens is not that prestigious of a city.
I feel like Athens is cool. I'd like to go to
it's
Athens.
It's cool like that, but I don't know the neighborhoods.
Oh, yeah, no,
like,
no,
it's
no,
like
I know
New York.
Mean.
Like, it's
not
like the
New
boroughs.
I mean,
you can
maybe,
say born in Queens.
Maybe it's like that for people who are in Greece, like it is for us in America.
Yeah, but then when you say it, like, I read an article where it was like somebody said it about a neighborhood in Los Angeles, and I was like, fuck you. Where it was like, it was not about that.
I feel like for LA, for some of that, it's like, okay. But
it was a
it's
lesser
people,
known
like,
one.
Yeah.
It's like an outside one.
Like, you could be like...
Is it Brentwood?
I'll hear like Sunset Boulevard and Mulholland Drive, and I'm like, yeah, I know of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Like Hollywood
I'm
Boulevard.
I'm so scared about going to LA. I got an ELA.
I know you did.
I'm
so excited
scared.
For you.
I'm nervous.
Why are you nervous?
That's a weird city.
You told me, and I told you, you're like Naomi Watts in Mulholland Drive.
I think about that all the time.
No, but just the first half where it's
yes!
good.
Oh my God. I think it'll be okay, but, oh, man.
I don't think LA is as gritty as it seems from all of the movies that we've watched. Set
I don't
in, like,
know if
the,
I'm nervous. Well,
70s.
And my mom is like, oh, it's on Sunset Boulevard. That's where all the gangs are.
The gangs. I mean, like, I guess there are gangs.
Yeah, it's like LA. Kind of a bad, it is kind of a shitty place to.
Yeah, I've kind of heard that it's not in a great area.
Yeah, it's like.
Well, whatever. No, you still get to...
You can see the Hollywood
you know
sign from your classroom.
Rollerblading you're going to get in.
Dude, I am so glad for the snow to melt to buy rollerblades.
Yes, and then before you go, we've got to go, especially if you're in the city this summer.
Yes, yes,
we're
yes,
rollerblading.
Yes.
Catch Graham and I rollerblading around the city.
At the Esplanade mainly, because that's going to be prime territory.
That's the easiest, yeah.
But I think all, like, pretty much, because I want to get an apartment in Alston so that it's connected to the mainland.
I went skating around Lower Alston a lot.
Yes.
Because it's not great up here because it's so hilly.
Yeah.
And any I can get up a hill. Going down's a lot harder. Yeah. But Lower Alston, the pavement's shitty, but it's, like, all flat. And, like, yeah, there's no cars counts. On the streets. It's nice.
Yeah. Because, yeah, fucking, I'm excited. I'm excited to rollerblade.
No, I'm excited for you. I think it'll be really fun.
Okay, but yeah, he was born in Greece, born in Athens, which is pretty damn cool. Like, fucking growing up in Athens. That's why, like, I wrote mythic for, like, the themes.
Oh, yeah, myth. Yeah.
I grew up in Athens.
What's interesting is, like, because, like, I'm sure Greece has, like, its own specific film scene. What, like, would really inspire him to, like, do the Hollywood film scene? Or I guess not, because a lot of his movies are UK.
Yeah, are they really? Oh, yeah, well, I guess with Colin Farrell and everything. So, yeah, he was born and grew up in Athens, so I feel like, I feel like myths are in his blood.
No, I think so. And I think what's, like, really interesting is, like, I'm sure there is a Greek film scene, but, like, I don't know. Some of his earlier films are, like, more British, so I can't really tell if he's British, like, in the British film scene or in the American film scene. Seems more, like, American, I'd say.
Yeah, and he went to some film school in Greece, and so I would definitely think that they've got their own, because he's got his own shit going on. Yeah, because
I think, like, Greece has, like, a decent cinema range. I feel like I haven't seen any Greek movies.
I feel like a lot of European countries must.
I've been watching a lot of South Korean movies lately.
Ooh, which one? Like what?
I'm just like a bunch.
Is Mishima South Korean?
I don't know.
What's that?
I don't know. I watched this one. I think it's just called Taxi Driver. It was The Taxi Driver.
A Taxi Driver.
So, no, it's like the Gwangju Massacres. Something I've never heard about, but like 3,000 people died.
Whoa.
It was, like, insane. And, like, like, a small Korean city. Because there was just, like student protests going on about, like, just some sort of government policy. And, like, they just sent in the military and just, like, killed and raped them all.
Whoa.
It was insane.
That's, like, that one, the bag.
Oh, and also the main dude in A Taxi Driver is the dad from Parasite.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's such a good actor. I love him. Maybe I will. A Taxi Driver?
And I rewatched the original Old Boy. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Oh, the original? You mean the Korean one?
Yeah.
The American one's shitty, I've heard. I haven't even watched
it. And Spike Lee, and it's bad.
Yeah. It's Spike Lee, really?
Yeah.
Wait.
I think so.
Maybe I need to look this up. Because I've seen part of the Korean Old Boy, and it was freaky, and I didn't finish it.
Yeah, it's like an upsetting movie, but I really like it.
Yeah, and it was like, I just couldn't, it was a very campy, I felt like.
No, it is, it's like very stylized in like a very early 2000s way.
Yeah.
But I love that. And it's a revenge story, so I feel like the stylization kind of matches, like, because revenge stories are kind of always silly.
Yeah.
Like over-dramatized to some extent.
Yeah, but that one shot where it's like the hallway shot. Like, it's cliche to say it, but what a shot.
It's also like one of the first movies to do the hallway fights.
Yeah, and it's like what a set too.
So he was raised like mainly by his mother.
Why is that? Why? It was because his dad was a professional Greek basketball player.
Wait, that's so cool.
He was on, like, the G NBA. The Greek NBA.
That's weird.
NBA.
Wait, I'm gonna look up his dad.
He was on the Game Boy Advance.
Is he hot?
Probably, if he was a pro basketball player. But I would imagine Yorgos Lanthimos is not hot.
Wait, I feel like I've never seen a picture of him.
Me neither. Like, even when I Googled him, I forgot what he looked like. Oh, he does look like he makes films. Like, honestly, reading his Wikipedia page, it feels like it was written by his disappointed father. Like, it was like, he was like, born in Athens to a wonderful mother and a professional basketball player. And he graduated this prestigious university and played professional basketball with his father's team. He was carrying on the legacy, and then he dropped out and went to film school. And now he makes films.
Like, very Oscar-winning films.
And then it's like, see below for awards.
That was really good. Wait, this possible fun fact. What you got for us, Graham?
So this is a possible fun fact.
It isn't our decided fun fact.
No, it's not the real fun. This is a preview fun fact. Is that, well, there's two of them. Nicole Kidman was almost in The Lobster. Almost. Because she saw Dogtooth and, like, contacted Yorgos and was like, I want to be in your films. Which is weird after seeing Dogtooth.
Like, Nicole Kidman is, like, a weirdly extremely prolific actor. I feel like I've seen her in, like, 17 things this year.
Have you seen The Others?
No, I've heard it's really good,
classic,
though.
Scary movie.
I watched Spooky. The new show with her and Hugh Grant, and it's, like, nominated for Golden Globe. It's not that good.
Which one?
It's, like, I think it's based on a book, but it's, like, a true crime mystery sort of thing.
Was it, like, the three women and
the Sharp
HBO?
Objects. But it's similar. Sharp Objects was really good. It was also a
Was that
mystery.
Scream Queens?
Very different. I think that's on like Stars or whatever. Actually, that might be FX. I don't know. I don't care.
But there's a second fun fact, a second possible fun fact, which is he was a big Clueless fan.
I love that. How does that inspire his work?
Very endearing. Well, wasn't like the queen? Was she the girl, the woman in Clueless? Wasn't she? Let me look this up. Clueless. I feel like there was
some. The only one.
The mom in Killing of a Sacred Deer was in Clueless.
Because I saw that and I'm like, what's her name? Alicia Silverstone.
Yes.
I like saw that and I'm like, is that Alicia Silverstone? Mm-hmm. Like, no, it's not. But like, they had like made her up like and like gave her different teeth. She looked like really weird. But that's so funny that he got to work with his idol. That's so cute.
And he's like, he's got to such a point where he's like, I want you.
Yeah. And like, I feel like a lot of like art directors are kind of like that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I feel like that's the goal.
And that's very endearing where it's like, that's a good point.
It's like you have so much like pull with people in Hollywood that you can just do whatever you want. Even if like you're not making like the biggest blockbusters, it's like people are still like, yeah, I want to do this person's stuff.
Yeah, and I felt like that especially with Favorite, where it was like, oh, Emma Stone's in this movie, this person's in this movie, this person. Like, holy shit! Like, people want to work with this guy.
Yeah.
Like, he can just say a name, it's like, boom. It's like Jon Favreau and Chef. Ever see Chef?
Graham watched Chef tonight.
Well, I've watched the first, like, hour, and I think I've got, like, 30 minutes left. And it's really good. It's surprisingly good. I kind of want to open a food.
So what would you say your impressions of his work in general are?
I would say general... weird, but also like in a good way, in a really good way, and like that the deadpan like performances, and it's very like the dialogue and performance like really drives it, and that's like where his style really flourishes.
Yeah, it's like with as a director he almost does like anti-directing where he's like like, hey, actors, don't emote this at all. Like, delivering, like, insanely emotional lines and then being like, then just don't do it. But then there's bursts where it's, like, really, really active and, like, really heightened emotion that's coming from the actors. And, like, the unpredictability of that, it kind of adds to, like, the impact of those really emotional scenes.
Yeah, and, like, especially in The Lobster, I think The Lobster is his funniest movie. I think The Lobster is fucking hilarious.
Oh, I love The Lobster.
Oh, I watched like the first half of it this morning. Oh, so fucking good. I forgot how funny it was. But yeah, it can lead to a lot of hilarity in a lot of weird ways where you're like, oh, this is, I don't know why this is funny, but this is really funny.
Even in Killing of a Sacred Deer, obviously The Favorite's like kind of a comedy.
Yeah, and I think The Favorite, he really, it's a different level of his style. It's like a bigger budget and a bigger, not or a bit less weird.
I just realized this is definitely going to be like one of the podcasts where we're just jerking off the director. But you know what? It's okay. We're starting season two on a positive note.
Exactly.
And that's fine. We're going to get into some controversial ones this season.
We're
so.
Going to have some haters. Yeah. So why not get the lovers while we can?
Yeah. No, I mean, we'll be the haters. We're the haters in that situation.
But then the people will hate us too.
Oh, yeah, true.
Like, okay, like, you think that?
Anyway.
But what are your general impressions?
I love it. I mean, I think he's Like, it's weird. And, like, I wouldn't expect everyone to like it.
Yeah.
It's not, like, one of those things where I'm like, this is objectively amazing. Like, you should like this. But, like, I think that it's definitely dependent on, I don't know. I think that's hard because I think some of his movies, like, The Favorite, too, it's like, okay, you should like this movie. It's homophobic not to like The Favorite.
It was surprisingly lesbian.
In, like, a very delightful way.
Oh,
though.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, I didn't know this was going
to
be so
I came
lesbian.
To see this movie.
It's like you can never go wrong with an added lesbian plot. Like, I just...
Especially Emma Stone. With Emma Stone, yeah. You can't go wrong. You can't go wrong.
Anyway, so let's go to... Is Dogtooth his first movie?
Well, actually, he made a couple Greek movies before Dogtooth. But
oh, that's interesting.
I've never seen them, and I don't expect you to see them. I don't really want to see them. I looked up the trailer, and they didn't even have subtitles on it. And I was like, okay. It was all in Greek, and they didn't even try. But it looked very Yorgos Lanthimos. Like, yeah. You could still tell it was, like, him.
That's, like, I'm still baffled by his favorite movie being Clueless. Because, like, where did he get his taste for that style? Like, that's... It's,
like, it's not his
it's
style.
So weird. But, like...
Is it? I've never seen Clueless.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't think.
It's like a cheesy Paul Rudd movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. His work is, like... I'm gonna say it. He's like an auteur.
Oh, no!
Purely in the sense that nobody else's work matches his.
Yeah.
Like, you can't find that anywhere. And you see that, and you're like, this is a Yorgos Lanthimos movie. Like, obviously.
And it's like, you can tell it's his, like, vision of how he wants it to be. And that's, like, definition auteur, classic auteur. And you can see it across all his movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, I think it's really interesting, because I'd never seen Dogtooth. And I thought it was going to be way better than it was. And
it's weird.
Oh, it's really weird. It's the weirdest one of his movies, honestly. Like, if you think Killing of a Sacred Deer is weird, fucking watch Dogtooth. Because then you'll go back to Killing of a Sacred Deer and be like, oh, this is kid
shit. Makes sense.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is fucking Iphigenia or whatever.
I didn't rewatch Dogtooth, but I saw it a really long time ago. Like,
you don't need to rewatch
it. It's like, I went through, like, a phase, like, early in high school where I was watching movies that I feel like it would have been better if I hadn't watched until I was older.
Yeah, I get that.
Like, watching, like, fucking Lars von Trier movies. And,
yeah,
like, I watched,
Melancholia.
Like,
I watched Melancholia when I was, like, 15.
like, you shouldn't watch that movie if you are, like...
But now it's weird, because it's, like, life copying, art copying life. It's, like, now I feel like me being, like, depressed and sad is now being, like, am I copying, like, Melancholia? Am,
like,
I ripping
also,
it off?
I think, like, I think I was already depressed, like, in high school when I watched Melancholia, but I think it did not help the situation.
Yeah, it made me more depressed, honestly. I was like, oh, that's how I should be. Yeah. That's how it is.
But if you... Now I feel better about it, because anytime I think about it, I think of Kristen Dunst and her adorable husband. Their adorable relationship.
Let me look up a picture of Kristen Dunst.
Wait, are you doing the bit right now, or is this real?
Wait, what do you mean? I wasn't trying to do any bit, but it turns out that...
This is like...
Kristen Stewart's husband.
This is like the seventh episode that we brought this guy up.
It's Jesse Plemons!
I can't believe you didn't remember that. Oh my god, that was
I really
so good.
Didn't. Like, honestly, we arrived at that conclusion totally separately.
That's so funny. But their relationship's adorable. I just find them neat.
They look very happy together. They look like a happy,
they met on
couple.
Fargo.
The TV show?
Yeah.
Oh wow. What a great place to. That's a great show.
Yeah.
Great show.
But they're just like a very wholesome little couple, and they're just doing their own thing.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. And did you hear Jesse Plemons is going to be doing blackface?
Yeah.
He's going to be a black messiah.
It was really unfortunate because of our love for Jesse Plemons.
Like, he's gonna get canceled hardcore. Like, you can't do that.
Although, I mean, fucking, like, everybody in Mad Men did it.
Blackface?
Yeah.
Did they really?
I mean, because it's a period piece. It's set in the 50s. That's what
blackface.
White people did then.
What? Did they? Was there really a blackface episode?
Dude, yeah.
Oh,
there was a specific
my God.
Black. Hold on, look up Blackface Mad Men. It's so good. Yeah.
Oh my god. What? Is this Mad Men?
Yeah, it was, they did like a Kentucky Derby episode, and it was tradition in like the 50s to like do blackface in the on the Derby Day, whatever.
Was it just this one guy, or did everyone do it?
I think it was just him. Okay. But he's still a prolific actor. He didn't get canceled.
That's weird.
Yeah.
You don't need to write that, guys. You can leave that detail out.
Yeah, dude, I don't know.
Yeah, it's historically accurate, but...
Maybe don't.
Yeah. It's not like we're losing any black stories or anything. Like,
yeah.
You're not erasing any voices.
Yeah, you're right. Anyway.
But back to you.
Away from blackface.
Do you know the whitest guy ever? Lex Friedman?
Okay, you put that picture in there.
Have you ever gotten his YouTube recommendations?
I have no idea who that is.
I fucking hate him so much. Like, anytime I get his YouTube recommendations, I'm like, never recommend me this channel. He's like typical bro podcaster, where I think he was in the military, and so now his perspective is guy with a suit. And so he wears a suit, just a three-piece black suit, every day on his podcast, and he has a shaved head, and he's like, today we're going to be talking with Elon Musk. He's like one of those guys where it's like, we've got Jordan Peterson on the podcast.
Shut the fuck up.
And so I make sure to always click never recommending his channel again.
More about Dogtooth.
It was very sexual. It was surprisingly.
I think some of the scenes were a little gratuitous.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot much.
I was going to say a bit much.
It's a lot much. Like, and it's very grim.
And it's incestual, and it's like, oh my God, we get it.
Yeah, Jesus. I think some of that was a bit much.
And all the self-mutilation, running through all his movies. Like, that's fucked up. Like, that teeth shit, that's fucked up.
It's disturbing in a way that I don't think was that, like, intentional or artistic. But yeah. I think it's, like, within the scope of his work, it's like, yeah, like, I see it, but, like, I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing ever, but I.
Yeah, I just hate the teeth. I hate the teeth.
I don't feel good watching it.
Yeah, no
doubt. In, like, any way.
But I think I wrote down somewhere in my notes where it was, like, fucking, like, not institutionalized, but, like, you know when SpongeBob goes into the future in that one episode, and he's like, future, you know that one, and everything's metal?
Yeah.
Like, that, but applied to sex. Like, that's Dogtooth. And, like, that's his view of sex, like,
that's
specifically in that film, but in his other films, it's portrayed a little more artistically.
Yeah, I agree.
And in a way you can kind of laugh at and identify with a little more.
No, like, this kind of just feels, like, dirty to watch.
It really is, and it's like, oh my God, this is, like, I was not expecting to watch, like 20 minutes of porn.
Yeah.
Like, when I was watching this movie, I'm like, oh my God, okay, we get it.
But again, like, I saw this movie way too young, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like, I don't want to watch that movie now.
I remember, like watching good. Shame at, like, 15.
Me too, me
being,
too.
Like, this is probably not.
Yeah, but that's such a good movie, and it's like,
oh, Shame.
I think sex is portrayed more interestingly in Shame than in Dogtooth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. But I thought Dogtooth was interesting, conceptually, just like for a small budget indie film. Mm-hmm. Like, you got one location, it's like a, what do they call it? Like a lock-in episode or whatever.
Bottle.
Yeah. Bottle episode.
Yeah, it's just unsettling and, like, I don't know. It's a one-time watch for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like Love or whatever, that fucking horrible movie.
That grotesque pile of shit.
Like, I would imagine Yorgos was like, to his Greek buddies, he's like, hey, the sex is real. They're really brother-sister, you know?
Oh, that's really upsetting.
But in Greek. But that's really, I don't have too much to say about Dogtooth. What do you have to say about Dogtooth?
Yeah, that's pretty much covers it.
Yeah, it was, we got it. And it was very, the ending to all of his movies are very, like, open-ended and disturbing, but this one especially, it was like, fuck, like, she died in the car. Whoa.
Yeah, well, I don't think none of his movie endings are necessarily.
Yeah, that one, it's just like, god damn. But then let's move on to...
The
lobster! Hey, hey, hey!
It's fucking love the lobster. It's amazing.
Oh, it was so good.
I've talked to people who were like, yeah, I don't really like the lobster. It's really weird, and, like, I get that. But, like, most people, I feel like, are like, yeah, I watched the lobster, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I it's kind of a gauge of, like, your sense of humor and, like, what you find funny, absolutely. And also, if I want to hang out with you, like if we'll get along, honestly. Yeah. Because like if you can't catch on to the lobster, you're like, that's too weird for me, man. Like, really? That's too weird? Like, don't get me wrong, it's a weird movie, but it's a cool, funny, weird.
But like,
and I feel like it's the most accessible.
I mean, I feel like the vast majority of people in this country would say it's weird. Yeah. Okay, that was so like those
all the white people in like mid-America, like all the Midwest. Yeah. My mom loves it though. I made her watch and she's like, that movie's hilarious.
The thing is, I think that if you, because like we've seen much weirder than this.
You're right.
It's that this is palatable. Whereas like if your range isn't that far, then it's like it does seem out there. Like I get it.
Yeah. No. I definitely get it.
It seemed like I'm like infantilizing people, but like.
Yeah, I take back what I said. I was still hanging out with you.
Yeah.
Like, I was just being a little exaggerated for the podcast.
Also, like, I saw a tweet once that said John C. Reilly is a better actor than Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's just not true at all. Like, John C. Reilly is good.
But John C. Reilly is fantastic. Oh, it's an exaggeration, but John C. Reilly is fantastic.
But he's always playing, like, a supporting role. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a movie where John C. Reilly
he's always... Actually, in Joaquin Phoenix and him did, like, a kind of a Western period piece. What's it called? Sisters Brothers.
Oh, I remember that coming out. Didn't people say it was bad?
I really liked it. I thought it was really good. And I don't like Westerns.
I'll have to look it up.
I only like Westerns that show like the actual brutality and grotesqueness of like the American West. And that was one of them. I thought it was really good.
Did you ever seen that? It's like Tombstone. Like not Tombstone. It's like fucking, I don't know. Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, I've heard of that. We're back.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, the lobster is, like, fantastic.
I love it. It's so funny. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah, I think everybody does a great job in it. Did it come before Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Brandon work.
Did you see Killing of a Sacred Deer first?
No, I saw the lobster first.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't know.
Came before.
Yeah, I just watched Killing of a Sacred Deer recently.
Oh.
It was asinine. Colin, I don't know why I said that. I've never used that word before in my life.
I only just recently watched Killing of a Sacred Deer. Asinine.
I've never said that before in my life. I think I misused it.
No, it was just so funny. It was definitely the right context. It was great. Anyhow.
But I think Colin Farrell is also like an acting genius.
Yeah.
And that accent.
Oh, is that his natural accent? Yeah. Oh. Fuck Colin Farrell. he plays a pathetic like an everyman kind of like a pathetic everyman.
Yeah, but he's so good.
Like he's so like, and it he plays so well with Yorgos's. Like I feel like in Dogtooth, none of the actors really caught on to what he was.
No, you're right. He's definitely found his cohort of actors that do exactly what he wants of them.
Yeah.
Being really just Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz.
Really. And they're so good.
And they're amazing. And I could watch either of them do anything.
Yeah.
But I think that all of the actors in the shine. Also Olivia Colman.
Oh my god. Was she in Lobster?
Yeah. She was like the
headmistress.
Yeah,
you're right. She is so good.
Like, I feel like where Dogtooth was like all just that negative, like, I didn't get as much comedy from Dogtooth, and it's, like, you get, like, it's dark comedy, obviously, but you get that, like, sort of, like, this moment's, like, intended for this to be, like, a break, or, like, just, I don't know, not even, like, a break from all of, like, the, because, like, his subject matter is really fucking, like, depressing, usually.
Yeah.
But, like, you, not a break, but, like, you can see that, like, extreme in either direction.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, The Lobster is definitely, like, his most comedic film, and I love it for that. It makes it a lot more like accessible for the audience to jump into it and really, because like Dogtooth, you're just like, holy shit, this is weird as fuck. But this is laughing. It's a different thing. But also in my notes, I wrote down that where like Dogtooth was like the future, the SpongeBob future. This is like, I said, a hyper intellectualization / rationalization of like love.
Oh, that's a really, really good take.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it Wait, this is not actually going to be an interesting film take, but I had this like concept for all of our viewers who watch Love Island. Like, so if we made Love Island, I'm a huge Love Island fan. I've watched every season of US and UK, which is a really big time commitment. yeah, fun fact about me, I love terrible reality television. So basically, like, if you took Love Island and you made it so, like, it wasn't on TV and anybody could do it, like, yeah. sign up for it, like, as a thing, and then it started becoming, like, just a regular thing that everybody did all the time of, like, going to this, like, vacation and then, like, getting matched up with people. And it just keeps going until you get to The Lobster. I feel like there's a correlation between Love Island and The Lobster.
Is that what Love Island is? Is that it's like you go to the hotel and you need to find love?
Yeah, no, the winner is, like, the couple who seems the strongest. Wow. So it's like you get there, it's like 5-10 sexy singles, five guys and five girls. They all show up and then they like throw new people in, have people eliminated, and like whoever's in the strongest couples win. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to find love.
That's like a Black Mirror episode.
Basically, yeah.
That's fucked up, but it is The Lobster.
But it's so fun to watch. but yeah, it's basically the same thing. I'm just like, I mean, this is obviously not Love Island.
Yeah, but pretty much.
Yeah.
It's the same concept, pretty much.
But, like, the idea of, like, how, like, I don't know, this sounds like a really corny take, but, like, the animalistic nature of love.
There you go.
Like, I mean, it's irrational, and it, at the end of the day, it comes down to, like, the more base instincts that then we can really understand in, like, a way that, like, this movie's not rational. Like, mm-hmm. That isn't a rational part of our psyche. So I think that that's really interesting.
Okay. So Hafiz was a Persian poet in the 1300s, and he said, "Oh, you who are trying to learn the marvel of love through the copybook of reason, I'm very much afraid you will never really see the point."
Ooh, yeah. Wait, that's such a good relevant quote.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so glad I found it.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
Yeah, because it's like, you can't really think your way to love. You just have to love, and you can't you can't rationalize it like that. And it is something in the unconscious, and you're not conscious of what's in your unconscious.
But also, like, I think there's, like, kind of in there a grim reflection on, like, society's view of love.
Because the Western society is, like, the society of the rational mind.
Yeah. Ooh, that's nice. But, like, also, like, the idea that, like, love and, like, marriage and everything has become, like, so utilitarian. Like, you do it because it's what everybody does. And because if you don't, like, you will be made to feel kind of, like, out of place. And because, like, there's, I mean, tax incentives, like, there's a lot of reasons for it. But like, I don't know. It's, like, the movie's all about, like, the externalization of love. And I think that it is, like, kind of to a point where it reflects on our inability to, like, love the self and, like, have that be enough, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I've just read this book by Leo Buscaglia. He was like a special ed professor in something like the 60s, and he wrote a book on love. And he said, like, you can't love anybody if you don't love yourself.
That's,
like,
a RuPaul quote as well.
You have to start with yourself. But it's common wisdom, because it's true, is that if you don't love yourself, because really, at our core, we are all really the same, and we are all going through, like, the same human experience.
Yeah.
It is pretty much, we are all human. We're going through the human game. Mm-hmm. And if you don't love yourself, then how can you love anybody else? Because really, when you do love another person, you're loving yourself, if that makes sense.
Pulling up a link real quick.
Because, like, isn't it crazy there's other people, like, their lives are fully their lives and deep and fucking crazy and as awful and lonely, but also as amazing and glorious as your life. And I think that was a Schenectady, New York quote somewhere where it was like that, where it was like, your life is everybody is having that experience.
Thinking of all these good movies really makes me want to watch movies.
like, I'm glad I majored in film.
Yeah, honestly. Sometimes I, like, being a film major is a constant existential threat of, like, oh my god, I'm making a huge mistake. Why did I do this?
Yeah.
And then, like, sometimes you're like, but I just love movies so much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like 70% of the time I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? But then 30% of the time I'm like, this is the only thing that I'm really, really passionate.
So, you know, watch our podcast, get us sponsored, and then we can talk about movies forever.
Please,
that's all I want.
Please.
this is what I was pulling up.
Ladies, congratulations. And remember, if you can love yourself, how the hell are you gonna love somebody else?
This is like 9-minute video of RuPaul just doing that over and over. RuPaul owns a fracking ranch.
Isn't that the meme, RuPaul fracks?
Yeah.
That's absurd, but also like the epitome of like the gay liberal
also,
feminist
yeah, no,
that we were
I mean,
talking
like,
about.
I know RuPaul was like influential back like in
the
Stonewall
days
and stuff, but like also like now she's like just kind of regressive. Like she was like, yeah, I wouldn't allow like any trans people on the show.
That's weird.
Because they're taking like performance enhancing drugs. That's I did air quotes with that, by the way. But like also it's like you're doing drag is like completely different from being trans.
Yeah.
They're like very separate things.
Yeah.
And it seems like really, I don't know, reductionist to be like, yeah, this is
performance enhancing.
Yeah, that seems dumb.
Like they would automatically be better if they were.
Yeah.
Okay. That's yeah.
Imagine being a drag queen and also a TERF. It's like, that's crazy.
It's like in Cards Against Humanity, where it's like you have to do two cards at once. You're like, oh, she's a drag queen and a TERF. Hey!
TERFs. Yeah, so anything else about The Lobster? I feel like we covered a lot, but it's just...
Yeah, just that it's really fucking good and probably one of his best. Movies, and that Colin Farrell's really good. Everybody's really good. It's fucking hilarious, and it is like his most distilled take on the human condition and love and connection and that.
Yes. No, I couldn't agree more. I think that it's definitely, we'll get into it later, but I think it's his magnum opus.
I love that word.
I do too. It's so fun.
Did you ever see that movie, Mr. Holland's Magnum Opus?
No.
I never did either, but my mom made me. Like, she was like, you should watch this movie. If you like movies, you should watch this movie. And I'm like, no, it looks stupid. Anywho.
So let's move on to Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Did you see it? Have you seen this movie?
I just saw this recently, in fact.
Wow. What do you think?
I liked it. I didn't like it as much as Lobster, but or The Favorite. I'd say it's definitely out of those two. It's hard because they're both so amazing, but like, it's really dark and it's very uncomfortable.
It's like it's in between Lobster and Dogtooth. It's weirder than The Lobster, but not as weird as Dogtooth.
And it's like also like I said with Schenectady, I am quite the hypochondriac. And that it felt like that it's felt like a very hypochondriac movie.
Yeah, it was freaky. And it's like when you go to the doctor and they're like running all the tests and you're like, nothing's wrong with you. Why are you doing this? It's like nobody really believes you.
That's like the opposite of Schenectady, New York. Right?
Yeah,
it's like...
where it's like there's everything wrong with them.
Yeah, he just keeps
but
doing
they're ignoring
it,
it. But then they pay attention. But they can't.
Yeah, but the... I think that's the scariest thing. I think that's way scarier than the Disconnect Key version because it's like going
to
a doctor.
You have obvious symptoms.
Yeah, and it's like fucking blood out of his eyes. Like, I didn't like that.
Yeah, that was freaky. That was freaky. And it's like, that's so freaky. I don't like that at all.
No, everything about that movie is really unsettling. The kid in that movie, what's his name?
The main kid, the mean kid. He was freaky. Him eating spaghetti? Like, what the fuck is spaghetti? That's so disgusting. But he was so good. And I think he does a really good job in capturing Yorgos Lanthimos's, like, weird, like, off-kilterness in his own way. Like, it's not a Colin Farrell way. It's, like, it's definitely through his own, like, weirdness.
Also,
but it's cool that he's a kid.
Like, Sonny Soljic, the skater who was in mid-90s, the kid was, like, the younger brother in that. before he did mid-90s.
Whoa. I didn't know there was a younger brother in Killer of Sacred Deer.
Yeah, there's like the older kid, like the weird kid, and then like this his son, Colin Farrell's son, and his daughter, and so he played the son.
Wait. Colin Farrell's son.
Yeah.
Oh. I do know who you're talking about. I'm sorry. I thought you meant the crazy kid.
I phrased
brother.
That weird. But yeah, no.
Yeah, Colin that's
son.
Him?
Yeah.
Oh shit. He's good. He's really good in this movie. Mid-90s was okay.
Okay.
But he was good.
Maybe if Jonah Hill put out another fucking movie, we would do Jonah Hill.
Maybe. I saw that movie early, and those kids came, and they were high as fuck.
Oh, yeah, we were in the same screening.
Oh, yeah, we were?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, those kids were just, like, stoned out of their minds. They were. There was the one, like, the white guy who's, like, just, like, stroking the curtain behind him the whole time. He's like, okay, bud.
But all the VMAs went, and so they were asking, like, they should have been asking questions to the director.
Yeah.
But these were like 12-year-old skater kids.
It's like, so what did you think of this shot composition? And the kids are like, I don't
know. So in the third act, climax, do you think that this could have been done
differently? And like, apart from like Sonny Soljak, they're not actors. Like,
oh, they're
just
skaters. Yeah, it's like kids where it's like they got real kids off the street.
Yeah, like they don't want to be answering these questions. Shut the fuck up.
They're like, I already did the movie. Like, you saw it.
Anyway, back on Killing of a Sacred Deer.
But I did like Killing of a Sacred Deer.
No,
I liked it. I think I liked it more than The Favorite, actually.
Ooh,
I think I would place it above The Favorite, but below The Lobster. That's my ranking.
Yeah, I think I'm other way around, but still Lobster.
Like, I love The Favorite. Don't get me wrong. It's really good. It's a close, like, they're pretty much tied.
I don't know. I think I just, with Killing of a Sacred Deer, it's just more uncomfortable to watch.
It really is. It really gets under your skin. And especially when it's like the fucking medical shit, and it's like also a revenge story where it's like,
yeah,
this guy killed my dad, and so now I'm going to seek revenge on his kids.
But it's like, it's not like a typical revenge story because you don't really know what the hell's happening.
Yeah. The second time around, you know, you can.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But all of it's like, it's upsetting. Yeah. But I think it is kind of, the story's kind of told, not like, not backwards, but like, in a way that, like, makes it so it takes it a while to, like, figure it out.
Yeah.
But this movie was what really, like, played that extreme of, like, the deadpan versus, like, in really intense emotional, like, situations.
Yeah.
And Nicole Kidman did a really fucking good job at that.
Nicole Kidman's fucking so good.
She's good in everything, but I think in this she did such a great job of, like, really, like, being that, like quiet, repressed, like, going through all the beats, and then, like, I think it was like a scene in the hospital. She like freaked out on her daughter and it was just like, whoa.
Like slapped her, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's so good. And like, she just commands attention.
Yeah.
She has gravitas.
She's gravitas. and I feel like there's so much that's implied in Killing of a Sacred Deer that is not explained.
And like, when I Googled like Killing of a Sacred Deer, like Yorgos Lanthimos, and like the Google breakouts come out where it's like, what does it mean? What is it? Like, I kind of understand it for this movie, because it is weird as fuck.
Yeah, it is.
But also, fuck you if you're Googling that.
Yeah.
Like, also, baseline, fuck
what
you.
What does it mean?
Fuck, what is this movie?
Ending explained?
Oh, I hate that so much.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking specifically of, like, there's a sex scene between Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman where she, like, lies down in, like, a weird, like, position.
It's like dead. She's dead.
Yeah. And then, like, so that there's weird implications there. And then her daughter does the same thing when she's, like, trying to hook up with that kid.
You're right.
And it's like, what, like, is, I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot of undertones that were, like,
It's like Lars von Trier where it's like, dude, you got some sexual pathology.
Yeah, it's
out.
Like, that's some Freudian shit.
Yeah, you need to go to a Freudian psychologist to make sure it's Freudian.
No, I think that
you can go to, also, Andre Puca, who I love. He was talking.
You should get him to listen to the podcast.
Oh my God, I should turn him on to the podcast.
Wait, no, in my email, I told him that I was doing a podcast with Graham.
Yes. Please, Andre Puca, if you're listening to this, I love you. I love Lovers and Lollipops. It was such a good movie. And also, he was talking about Jungian psychology and like The Shadow.
Dude, I
and
love
I was like,
Jungian
I was like,
psychology.
Dude, I want him to start talking about like occult shit next. Where he's
I wrote
like
my final paper for my abnormal psych class on Jungian psychology.
Fucking Jung is crazy.
I love it though. I love his theories like
yeah.
way more than like a lot of therapeutic theories.
Especially Freud. Like comparing Freud and Jung, I feel like is like apples and bananas. Where it's like Freud is like, your mother. You want to have sex with your mother, eh? And he's everyone's like, no, what are you talking about, man?
Well, even like, I don't know, even against like modern treatments and stuff, I still think Jungian's like one of the more interesting ones. Because like nobody really does Freud anymore.
Yeah, thank God.
But like, I don't know. And to all my mentally ill homies out there, I don't think CBT works.
CBT?
Cognitive behavioral therapy. that one.
There you go. I thought you said CBD, like Elon Musk.
Elon Musk says CBD doesn't work.
But CBT.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's, I don't know.
Is that what ECAPS does? Because they don't work.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like the most popular form of therapy, especially yeah. for anxiety.
Yeah.
And I think it works for anxiety. I don't think it works for depression. Anyway, but there's like that. And I've also tried like the IFS model, which is I think is more interesting, but I didn't think it really worked for me. Yeah. It's like the idea that in your mind you have like an ecosystem or like a family. And, like, so there's, like, names for all of them, but it's, like, different parts of your mind are, like, trying to do different things at once, and it's about getting them to, like, coexist together, because, like, if you're, like, not well, then they're, like, at war or something.
That sounds really confusing, honestly.
It is very confusing. There's, like, different titles for all of them. It's, like, the, there's, like, the firefighters and the managers and the exiles.
I hate that one. Like, that's, like, playing Mafia. Like, I always hated when, in high school, in theater, when we played Mafia, I was, like,
I loved Mafia. Mafia was fun.
I hate Mafia. We had to play it at the castle. Dude, played Werewolf.
It beats like the stupid fucking improv theater games, like the park bench
you're
and
right,
like.
You're right.
Wait, I remember I for like one act stuff because that was like in like our high school theater.
Yeah, I don't. I went to therapy I think once, and then it was I said I'll take care of it. I got it. Don't worry. Because also it's so hard to open up and be truthful. It's like, you're a stranger, and I'm in a strange place, and I don't know you. I'm paying you so much money.
I know. I do BetterHelp, and it's expensive, but it's also, I need it right now.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah. Dude, medications are fucking ridiculous. Anyway, you just mess with your head so much.
In my pharmacology class, we were talking about...
You have a pharmacology class?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And it's, like, all about, like, native plant medicine, and, like, it's very interesting. And he was, like, because, like, in traditional medicine, it's, like, it's not just physical medicine, it's the community, it's the spirit, it's how you feel about yourself, and how you view yourself, and how you view yourself in the community. It's very community-focused.
That's really interesting.
And so he was, like, can you think of an example today where we've sort of westernized an aspect of health where we've sort of cut all that out, and it's just we focused in too much. And I said, like, depression and anxiety and SSRIs, a lot of times we treat as, like, a strictly chemical issue, where it's like, oh, you do not, like, this is the only thing wrong is that you don't have enough serotonin in your brain, and this is how we're going to fix it. Or it's like, oh, you just need to, like with therapy, it's just like, oh, you just need to, like, tell me your problems,
yeah,
and then you'll be fine.
No, I think therapy, that's, like, I think
and
that's...
And then, the reason I brought it up is then a girl raised her hand, and I was like, we've cut out, like, all of the spiritual mm-hmm. and all that, and the community, and it's just like that. And then a girl raised her hand, and she's like, actually, I think we have, because we have therapy. And you can get your problems out there.
Well,
and
here's the thing, is that therapy only works if you're in the right mindset for it. Two, like, the idea, that mythos of, like, you go there and you talk about your problems and you feel better isn't real.
Yeah.
It's more of just giving yourself more tools to, like, cope.
Yeah.
I think that's all it really does. But I still think you should do it. I think it's good to have somebody to reach out to and everything.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I do.
Definitely.
I go there every once a week.
I agree.
But to your point about SSRIs, like, any of you youngsters out there, if your doctor is like, hey, we should just start you on SSRIs. You're depressed, whatever.
Careful. Like, be careful. Think about it.
Go to a psychiatrist first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go to a psychiatrist.
I totally get that for a lot of people. Like, it is the right option and it works for them.
No.
And like, oh yeah, totally for you. Like, if that works for you, like, oh yeah, do it. Absolutely. Like, I don't want to stop you from, like, being happy and finding what works for you to be okay in your life and then finding a way to be in your life. Like, that's what we're trying to do. That's what everyone's trying to do. And so if you can find a way to do that, like, congratulations, because I haven't. Yeah. So, like, I wish I could.
No, so I'm gonna dive into my mental health right now. We're gonna do it. I was on SSRIs for like 2 years, like then just recently found out I was bipolar, and bipolar people are not supposed to be on SSRIs.
Oh, no.
So I had to withdraw, and withdrawing is like a really, really shitty process that they don't tell you about when they prescribe them.
Yeah.
So do your research. Go to a psychiatrist and make sure you're diagnosed with the right thing. But, like, it's just crazy. The whole medical system is terrible in America. I'm so sorry anybody living in this country like
me. I agree. And it's all for profit. It's all fucking capitalized.
Yeah.
And fucking.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, you need this? Well, give us some more money and we can make you better. And it's very disheartening. Where it's, like, the people who are trying to make you well are, like, so far removed from, like, actually caring about you.
Yeah. And it's like somebody's making a decision about your, like, something that's going to alter your body and your mind a lot. People who you've really only interacted with, like, maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And, like, that, like, max. And that's, like, okay, like, that maybe talk to somebody a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels very weird that these people who, like, don't know you are like, yeah, this is what you need to fix you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very, I feel like it's, like, a blanket thing that people are like, oh, well, this is like the default option for, like, if you're feeling like,
yeah, this. But anyway, yeah. It's just not for I definitely don't think they're bad. I think that,
yeah,
and I'm not a doctor, but I think that you should maybe just, like, look into things more, because I didn't.
I went on SSRIs for a little bit, and they were a pain getting on and a pain getting off, and they didn't really make a huge difference, noticeable difference for me.
Which,
like, in a way, I was looking. It was like some long C name. It was like let me see.
Is it Celexa?
Yeah.
I've never heard any good responses.
Yeah, it wasn't really that. I didn't. It didn't make me happy at all. And so that's my bit about it. And so.
Yeah, it's like half of the SSRIs, everybody's like, this is bad.
And it's like, not even like, only it changed my mood going on and off. And that's the bad part. It was like, I was nauseous 24/7. It was just like, awful.
I was on Lexapro, and that's the only one that, like, doesn't make you nauseous.
That's nice. I would have killed for that, because I was like, I'm a picky eater. I have a bad appetite to begin with, so... Like,
yeah,
I did not do anything.
I, like, specifically told my doctor, I'm like, I want something that will not make me nauseous, and she prescribed me Lexapro, which is not good if you're bipolar. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's just, get a psychiatrist. Most places don't have psychiatrists. You will need a referral, probably. Go to, like, a psychiatric nurse practitioner. They're just as able to help you as a psychiatrist. Take care of your mental health.
Yeah.
Make sure you're advocating for yourself. This is just our mental health
because
podcast.
Like we say, you can't love anyone else if you don't love yourself.
And times are tough right now. It's hard not to be sad.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what is relieving, is we're just human. Like, that's okay. That's the natural response to these situations. Mm-hmm. Like, this is fucked up. We're not supposed to be living like this in a fucking pandemic, locked in a house 24/7 in a little room and living in this capitalist hellhole. Like, of course we feel shitty.
Like, weird little things, like, I've just started noticing about, like, being inside and just looking at a screen all day. Like, Anne and Kristen and I all realized that we just have had headaches, each of us, like, behind our left eye.
Oh,
in the past
God,
couple weeks, we've just all been looking at screens all the time. And, like, my posture's gotten so much worse.
Me too. Oh, my God. I've been trying to stretch every day, and, like, God, I'm worried about my back.
I'm literally worried, because, like, I don't think anybody's dealt with this situation before.
Andre Puka was talking about it. He was like, guys, this Zoom shit is, like, fucking me up. He didn't say it like that.
He probably did. Okay, we got anything else on killing of a sacred deer?
That's where the myth, that's his most myth. Influenced movie, because obviously it was influenced by that one man.
Yeah, totally. But it's just like, whew.
Yeah, I think that's a good description.
Let's move on to The Favorite.
So, don't get me wrong, I love The Favorite. I think I got the wrong impression. The Favorite is a fucking great movie.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, and the acting is
phenomenal. I'd say The Favourite's his funniest movie.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's his most publicly...
It's the most palatable movie. Yeah. It's the most, like, digestible one. And even then, it's not that digestible, but... But, like, oh, God, still love Olivia Colman. Jesus Christ. Emma Stone.
Was it based on a true story? Is that true? All that? One thing, this is a gripe and a stupid gripe. This is an aesthetic gripe. The title cards in between all the chapters and the text that was all spread out, I was not. And there was too many of them.
You're right, there was too many.
But other than that, I thought it was a great movie.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, so it was kind of a true story. Oh my God, shut the fuck up, history.com with your stupid fucking paywall. Oh,
history.com?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, it goes off script a lot. But like the power struggle in it between the Olivia Colman and Rachel Weisz ultimately led to the two-party system of the Whigs and Tories, which is currently the thing. And
well, I guess that's an important. That's why they made the movie.
But I don't know. I love that they made it gay.
Yeah, like that's kind of what I want to know, if that part was real. But I guess he added that part.
I think that's probably added. I mean, we don't know.
But like, isn't that like the thing on like gay Twitter? I'm not on gay Twitter, but they're like. Old like founding fathers, like old like 1700s people, where they're like writing letters to their guy best friends,
yeah.
And they're like, "I love you so much. Like your eyes are the lotus flower on the pond of my heart." And it's like, "Whoa, what?"
Just bros being dudes.
And they're like, they were just friends. But it was a great gay, a great ancient gay plot.
I don't like period pieces really, like at all. Like, I mean, 20th century period pisses.
Period pisses.
Period pisses.
That's a good period pisser you got there.
I can get behind like 20th century ones, specifically. Like, I really love the 70s. Yeah, and like the 50s is fun sometimes, the 60s more so. Mm-hmm. But like 70s is like, that's a good vibe. But I thought that this was really like, intriguing, and like the ways that it was like modernized, it was definitely like dialogue wise was modernized to some extent, but like also it didn't feel like it was like taking you out of it, and in the sense like
it was a good balance of like legible and like knowable and back then, and then also the third way in the triangle is Yorgos's weirdness,
yes,
and so it's the perfect balance of the three.
It's a really, honestly, it's more of a delightful movie than the others. It's more delighting.
And also the cinematography. I feel like this is the most, like, experimental, and, like, there's vision in the cinematography, because I feel like in a lot of his other movies, the cinematography is really basic, and, like, the focus is on the dialogue and the performances, and, like, even sometimes the music. But I feel like in this one, like, all of the like super wide lenses and like that shit that he puts in there, like that's a really interesting creative choice.
And I remember the aspect ratio being square, but it was actually 1.85:1.
Is that like just 16:9, or what's 1.85?
I have no clue.
I thought it was like, let me look up. What's it called? The Favourite.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1.85. Now let me look at 1.85. Well, and it looks like it was it shot on film? Who knows? Yeah, it looks like, yeah. It was shot on an Arri Cam LP. And so, there you go. But 1.85 is,
I swear, but they're making some digital stuff now that really looks like film.
There, you can do a lot of things where it's like, especially with like good color correction and like,
dude, yeah, it's really, I think, good. It's just some fantastic editing. But
oh
like,
yeah, well, and just like all the fucking amazing huge sensors that we have.
Yeah, I've seen on the Arri Alexa specifically. I've seen a lot that are that could have fooled me.
Oh yeah. It's if you're not going for like that, like the broken look. Like the little kind of the torn look.
Yeah,
like, digital is just, in my opinion, like I like, don't get me wrong, film is like, it's cool and all, but digital is so much more practical. And like,
dude, film's so impractical and it's not accessible.
Especially
anymore.
for like still photography, like I love film, but for like moving, Jesus fucking Christ.
It's so impractical and it's so expensive and it's so just bad
insane.
For the environment.
It's insane.
It's like, what?
It's insane.
At this point, there's no point in using it. I think it's like, it's an important part of tradition.
You're just
whatever,
a douche like, if you're like, if you say that film is like, yeah, if you're like, I can tell the difference, man. Like, it's so, like, it's not the same, man.
I sort of, like, I could show them, like, three movies that were shot in Arri Alexa, and I'd be like, yeah, these are all film movies.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, or, like, because a lot of movies where it's, like, shot on IMAX film, it's, like, there's a lot of digital shit cut in.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
Where it's, like, not every single shot is like, on
everything's the digitally edited
IMAX
now.
Camera.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like,
going
why
through
would
digital intermediates, but through, like since the 90s?
Yeah,
since
why
Oh Brother,
would
Where Art
anybody
Thou?
Not edit digitally? Like,
oh, you got it. Nobody's editing on a fucking Steam Deck. Didn't Tarantino say he edited Hateful Eight on a Steam Deck himself?
Of course he did. That's a lie. That's a bold-faced lie.
I feel like I read that somewhere.
That's so funny. He definitely said that, and he's definitely lying.
And I can definitely imagine him saying something like that, too. Oh,
I'm
God.
So sad. My film one class was like right as the pandemic started, and we never got to use the Steam Deck.
No, really?
No, we literally, it was so fucked up. So like we got our like first roll of film, and it was just like the beginning project where we just shoot around random mm-hmm. stuff and capture like light or whatever. And then the pandemic hit, and they were basically like, yeah, this class is over. You can't do anything more. So we're going to give you all A's and
Whoa.
Sorry.
Whoa, that's fucked up. Because yeah. film one was one of my favorite. Like, I think Basic
really
Cine
cool.
is going to be like up there. But I
took it with Peter
so cool.
Flynn, and he was an amazing professor.
I took it with Sean Clark, and he was pretty cool.
Yeah. I feel like all the film one professors are like cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be to teach film one.
Yeah.
But
I remember he walked into class and like the first day and was like, you're all gonna die.
What? No.
He's like, but that's okay because you'll be captured in film. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh my God. That's a strong introduction there, Peter Flynn. That sounds amazing.
No, it was a
but
cool
and
class.
Using
I'm
the
sad
Steam Deck was so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, it was such an iconic experience. It was awful, but it was iconic.
Yeah. I mean, like using the Bolex is awful.
Oh,
but
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's a horrible time, and it makes you really, really glad that you can use digital.
Yeah, it really does. Like, that's what I've learned, like, using all this film, is being like, oh shit, I'm so glad that we can, like, shoot 10 takes of this and not worry about it.
Yeah, no, it's so nice. But yeah, wait, what were we on?
Oh yeah, the favorite. And because I think they shot a lot of it with a lot of natural light.
Yeah.
Is the thing. And, like, a lot of candlelight, which is what they did in that one, who's the Shining guy?
Stephen King.
No, the other one.
Oh.
Stanley Kubrick. Kubrick!
How did we forget Stanley Kubrick? We are a film podcast.
Okay, so what's that one he did about it was the period piece about like the knights and...
I don't know.
It's a very... Let me Google this. Kubrick.
I actually haven't seen a lot of Kubrick. It kind of... It's a little...
Barry Lyndon.
Yeah, I haven't seen him.
I've only seen the clips, but it's like he did the same thing where it's like... And he got one lens where it's like... It opened up to like a 0.5 or like a 0.3 f-stop.
Oh.
Like a 0.3.
Wait, that's crazy.
Yeah, like normally it goes down to like a 1.8.
Yeah, like I've never seen anything that would go below 1.8.
Because he needed all that light. And he did it with candles.
Yeah, now because I'm doing film photography, I don't even remember how to use a ball.
It's honestly awful, and all the millimeters are off because it's a different size sensor, and so I'm like,
and we had to use the analog light meters too, and that shit was just annoying.
And you're like, follow the thing, then go down here,
and then you need to like go to a separate little graph, and then like figure out like through like doing like math what the light is. That, like, why couldn't the light meter just tell you what the number was?
Oh, and here's another thing: why are light meters so fucking expensive? Have you googled the price of light meters nowadays?
I feel like that's something that our phones should be able to do by now.
Yeah, like that's a simple technology that we can work in there.
I mean, like, most cameras are built with them now.
Not, but not, like,
analog?
I guess, yes, analog, but I feel like with motion cameras, you can't do an internal one.
Yeah, like it just depends on...
With film, like, the Bolex, I don't think has one, does it?
No.
No, that's why you have to use it.
Yeah.
But And I feel like on set you always have to use one. And that's one of the things where
like wasn't even like the nice modern light meters. It's like the really bad ones.
Yeah, and even like modern light meters, it's like, oh, it's just the thing with the ball on it.
Yeah.
Like you got a golf ball stuck in there.
Oh god, I fucking it made me really happy that I shoot digital.
Yeah, I agree.
What else about the favorite?
The performances are just fucking spectacular.
Yeah. Like, dude, the tension and like the drama, I was here for it. It was so good.
Yes.
I was engaged the whole time.
Yeah, and it was like, normally I feel like with a period piece like about something medieval like that in the high courts, it has a very high possibility of being like very off-putting and very like, you're not engaged mm-hmm. like that. But he made it very human and very engaging and very immediate. You could very emotional. It's like it's in the air.
Yeah. I was definitely expecting Rachel Weisz to be the villain, and then I like they did the old switcheroo on us. Hey, and like Olivia Colman just did such a fantastic job of playing that like really grotesque character.
Yeah, that's a great word. That's a great word for that.
But it's like you feel so bad for her by the end too.
Yeah, yeah, and those damn rabbits.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That kind of made me want to get rabbits. They're so cute.
Ew! But their cages will stink and.
Well, yeah, they will. That's I'm not getting a rabbit. I have a cat, and that fulfills that need.
Oh, the cat is so cute, by the way, Sky.
Yeah, she's the best. Go follow her Instagram.
I do. Trust me.
No, the listeners. They need to see her.
We're recording a podcast.
Sky of 34 with underscores. She's
because 34 is the room number.
Yes, she's just the sweetest cat.
I remember because you took down the Bernie sign off your door, so I'm like, "Whoa, is this? Am I in the right place?" And I had to text Stella. Like, you're in room 34, right?
Yeah. And we moved in the Bernie sign because it was just a little too depressing to see. Yeah,
it's not. He's not in it.
Bleep that out. I saw somebody else on my road.
Yeah.
With a sign.
I'm gonna write that down.
I saw somebody else in my road with a Bernie sign in their window, but it was like they'd like put notes like paper over like it to make it into Biden, like just by changing the letters. But it was like, yeah, I get it. We just put a sticky note on ours that said "or settle for Biden."
That's funny. That's always sad. Okay, so 18, an hour 18, leave Harvard at don't.
I have to do that too, where I take a screenshot of things after I like get an email.
Sometimes
or
I just
down.
Go through my photos every now and then. I'm like,
what did I miss? What did I forget about?
What have I been doing? What have I been up to? But yeah, I love The Favorite. I think it's it's one of his best.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I don't have a ton to say about it. It puts
it's really good.
It's not
really
as like indecipherable as the other ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I definitely.
It puts most of like what it's saying out on the table. But I think it's really entertaining.
And he still has his style of his
absolutely.
His shit, his mojo going on. But what do you think? What would you say is your objective best?
I feel like I've been like keeping it a secret through this entire podcast, but it's The Lobster.
Okay, because that's mine too.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's just so fucking funny, and Colin Farrell is so fucking good in it. And I really feel like it's the pinnacle of his vision.
I feel like,
and his style.
Like I've felt the most watching it. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know when a movie makes you feel?
Yes, yes. And it was his first one that I saw.
Yeah.
And it was my exposure to
it was, I think I watched Dogtooth first, but I don't think I associated him with Dogtooth for a while.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's the most relatable and most, like, it has the most to say.
Yeah.
About, like, humanity and what's going on and our foibles.
Our foibles? Oh, that's a good word. No, and it's just, like, you can, because it's so abstract, too, you can, like, kind of garner the most from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that always. I think that's always really fun.
And I think laughing is a very interesting perspective to have on these things.
Yes.
Because especially a lot of times when we talk about love or connection or things like that or, like, our foibles, it's easy to get really downtrodden or be, like, either to idealize the experience and be, like, oh, it's not that big. We'll kind of put it under the rug and sort of like not really dig in deep. Or when you do dig in deep, like it's fucking Lars von Trier and it's depressing as shit. And I think being able to laugh at yourself and things like that is one of the most magical things that can happen, because like a lot of the times when we talk about that, we're in it and we are it and we identify with it and it's very serious. But when you laugh about it, you're separating yourself from
yeah.
it. And you're looking at it, and you're
well,
saying,
you can see the absurdity yeah. of it.
Yes, and I mean, sort of the cosmic joke of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a really good point. Yeah, so definitely The Lobster's the best in both of our books. Objective worst?
Yeah.
It's Dogtooth.
It's Dogtooth. It's just fucked up.
It's not fun to watch.
It's not. It's like, who's the guy in Into the Void? Enter the Void.
Gaspar.
Yeah, it's like Gaspar Noé.
It is. It's like, it's not the same, like,
intensity, style, but it's, but Dogtooth, Dogtooth gives me the same kind of feeling where it's like, I'm not going to watch this one again.
Yeah, it's the same vibe. I did not think, I think it was like one of those also, like, there's a lot of movies when I was younger and I watched it and it was like, I'm like, this is hard, like that kind of shit. And it's like, no, yeah. You just have trauma.
Yeah. And yeah, I feel like I'm surprised it won best foreign film at the Oscars that year.
Oh, really?
It did, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
It's really weird. Yeah. I don't think anything's out now except Golden Globe nominees. And I literally yeah. haven't seen fucking any of them.
I didn't see any movies last year. I don't know what. It was the pandemic. Nothing good came out. I don't think I saw any movies that came out in 2020.
My Letterboxd, I feel like I watched a lot, and then my Letterboxd list was like pretty short.
I keep forgetting to put shit on Letterboxd. I don't update it anymore.
Come on, you gotta get on that grind.
But also, Corey and I watch such stupid shit all the time. Oh, I should put Lovers and Lollipops on.
Oh, I finally watched Click.
Oh, how was that?
It was bad.
Yeah, it was sad.
It wasn't
too.
As
it was so sad.
It wasn't did as bad cry? As I thought it would be.
Did you cry?
To Click?
Yeah.
No.
I did. yeah. I've seen it twice, and both times I cried.
Like, genuinely?
It's so sad at the end, man. Or, you're not a man. I don't mean to say man, but it's, like, just a phrase.
But it's a happy ending.
Is it? I feel like it's, like, he, like, fucked his life away and fast-forwarded his whole life and didn't pay attention, then was like,
then
oh,
he
my dad's dead. Did he go back and do it all over again?
Yeah. It turned out it was all a dream, and he went back to present. And
forgot about that.
No, it's a stupid happy ending, and the ending would have been better if it was the sad one.
Fuck Adam Sandler.
Fuck Adam Sandler.
But that movie is really sad, especially with the dad.
Yeah, that shit was sad.
Yeah. He's like at his dad's grave.
It's like weird, the parents in that movie, they're like, let's make him super Jewish and super hypersexual. Like, what?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Oh, and it was Henry Winkler, too.
Really?
The dad was Henry Winkler.
Maybe I need to rewatch Click.
Anyway, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, I think Dogtooth was his worst.
So what do you think he's trying to tell us overall through his body of work?
I think his general auteurist themes and his shit, his groove, is bleak existentialism.
Ooh.
And also tied in a lot with myths. But especially in Killing of a Sacred Deer, but also I feel like Lobster is sort of like a modern myth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like he takes that existentialism in sort of a comedic way, but it's still sort of that bleak, hopeless like perspective of reality.
No, yeah, it's a bummer. They're all
yeah.
kind of bummers. You can choose to see some positivity in there, but
yeah.
I don't think
you
that's
laugh during
the intention.
It, but it's sad.
Just another man who needs to go to therapy that we've talked about on the podcast.
It's true. It's really true. He needs to go to like a sexual therapist
yeah.
too, like one that specializes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard because all the subject matter is really different.
Yeah, yeah, and especially it's strange that he started like he's gotten more commercial as it goes along.
Yeah, that is kind of
like,
weird.
It started with Dogtooth, where it was like all incest, and then it was like The Lobster, where it was like, oh, it's a little weird, but it's American. And then it was like Killing of a Sacred Deer was like more of a structured myth.
I feel like, but The Lobster was all UK. So it still felt like
it was westernized.
Yeah.
Maybe Greece. It wasn't. It was de-Greeked.
De-Greeked.
He was de-Greeked.
No, you're absolutely right. It has, which is odd, but I mean, he's making money.
I honestly think The Lobster is way better than
Dogtooth.
Dogtooth.
Absolutely.
And so it's not like I'm saying that as like a dig.
And I think that, I mean, I think The Favorite's way better than Dogtooth. I think
Me too.
At the level he's at now. And he, like, he's making money. He won an Oscar. Like,
oh, yeah. No, he's a success. He's a very prolific, successful, like, famous film director.
But I feel like nobody actually, like, we're going to post this episode and nobody's going to be like, oh, yeah, Yorgos Lanthimos.
I don't think so. I think the people, like, people who follow our podcast know films, I feel like.
Yeah, I think some of them, but, like, also.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because we've done some pretty weird guys.
We should start filming this and put them on YouTube. And that way people can leave comments.
We should have done this one. Yes, and then we can get depressed over the YouTube comments.
Yes.
So we'll do it next week. We're recording this.
For our next
week,
podcast, decidedly, we will film so we can get some video content.
Do you
want to
do it just like on the iPhone or do it on
the Let's do it on a phone. Yeah.
And I think I just got this SE.
I just got the 12 Max.
Yo! Doesn't that have like 6 cameras or something?
Look at all the cameras.
Oh my God.
It's way too many.
Is that one on the bottom right there? Is that 4?
I don't know what that is, but there's like one right here and then one. Yeah, there's like 4 cameras on this bit.
What the fuck? That's too many. Like, you just need one.
Yeah. But it's cool. It does like cool stuff.
Yeah, no, it's like a good camera. Don't get me wrong.
No, it's like honestly, at this point, it's just on the level of like a DSLR. It's like
honestly,
fucked up. But you just there's no manual setting, so it's like that's what,
for
it's
still
not.
It's like an advanced, like it's so fucking advanced, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
But for video, you know, it's an iPhone.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But for stills, it's like damn. But anywho, Stella. Before we leave this audio podcast, do you have any incestuous or graphic or mysterious or fun facts?
I'd say fun and graphic, not so incestual. So the heart surgery scene in Killing of a Sacred Deer was real, which I have a lot of questions. Whose heart was that?
Yeah.
Were they cool with letting this happen? Were the doctors cool with letting this happen?
And like,
what hospital would allow this?
The doctors handed the real heart just off to Colin Farrell. They had a bunch of lights and like
imagine,
they had the Astras and everything.
Imagine
there.
Like you're under, like you're getting like heart surgery, like an actual heart surgery. And like, so the surgeon comes in right before your surgery. You're really fucking nervous. And then, like, they're like, no, don't worry. Colin Farrell's going to pull out your heart, and he's going to hold it for a second. But don't worry, it's for art.
And then, like, I would imagine Yorgos Lanthimos was there. And so you just have this Greek, fat Greek fuck just standing in your operating room being like, no, over there. Oh, go over here. Go, no, not yet. No, no, come here. No, don't do it like this. Do it. Come on. Come on, fucko, look here.
He did like 13 takes where this man's beating heart was just in Colin Farrell's
like, can we get another heart in here? This guy's not cutting.
This heart's looking kind of ugly.
He's like, guy, you don't have the right heart. We gotta get another
Your heart's not in it.
This is not a Hollywood heart. That's a good fact.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's like in like the Poltergeist one where it's like, they use real skeletons.
Is that real?
I think so.
That's weird.
Which is kind of fucked up. Also, it's like Poltergeist isn't that scary.
Does he have any upcoming projects?
So I think they say on the IMDb trivia pages, they say that he's going to do another Greek movie eventually when the time is right. But who the fuck knows what that means?
Okay.
And like nobody speaks Greek except you fucking Greeks.
I feel like that's what so many of like this school of directors do is they're like, oh, I'll release another movie eventually. I'm not going to tell you when. And then they just fucking drop a new movie.
It's like it's coming out in 2 weeks. Yeah. And you're like, oh, look at some preparation here.
I need to emotionally prepare for this.
I need to get excited here. And so I don't know if I would. I'd watch it. Don't get me wrong if it was in Greek, but I'd be disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah.
His next
sure.
movie was in fucking Greek. Like, fuck you.
I'd say that's about it for the night. And with Graham's anti Greek remarks.
That's a good place to end.
Hold on. I need water.
But you can follow us on socials. Stella, what's the Pods Emerson socials?
Our Instagram is pods.emerson and the Twitter is podsemerson. If you want more from me, you can follow me on Instagram at stella.drews with two S's. Or you can follow me on TikTok. Why not? Nope. Stella's Films on TikTok. I'm making TikToks now. They're just aesthetic TikToks because that's the laziest version that I could do.
I want to look up your TikToks now because I don't go on TikTok, but now I'm excited.
Yeah. And then you can follow Graham at...
F_Instagram. So F_Instagram. And I'm going to restart it. I'm going to do it again because I haven't been posting a lot of pictures recently. I've kind of been lazy. But I've got a bunch of pictures in the backlog. It's not as if I've stopped taking pictures. I just always forget to post to Instagram. And so I'm going to start doing it. I promise.
Graham's amazing photographer, and you should follow him for all the cool, shitty posts.
And I've also been painting, and so I guess I'll post my paintings.
But that's so cool. How long is it painting?
It's so relaxing. It's so much fun.
I love that. Okay, that's probably it for today. Yeah, you got anything else?
No. Bye!
That was a good one.
I love it.